Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
It's a sad state of affairs, really, that I should have to warn you about a conversation with Brian Darcy, but I suppose I would say that maybe exercise your discretion here if you're liable to be upset by this subject matter. Brian Darcy, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
So, Brian, sad to say, here we are again. Another awful week, disgusting, distressing revelations, lives ruined, another report, all manner of new horrors. I'm wondering how you process this both as a priest, Brian, and then as a survivor of sexual abuse yourself. Maybe first as a priest, how do you process this?
Well, it's devastating, you know, and one of the things about it is that it's absolutely true. That's the first point about it. It's absolutely true. And we have to thank those within the commission, Mary O'Toole and others, who brought it to our attention again. The difficulty is that, you would have thought that at this stage, 30 years later, we would have heard the full story. Mm. And actually, even after this week, we have not heard the full story or anything like it. We have only a cross-section of the abuse that went on. And there are many other religious who are in schools who didn't partake in it. And there are many other schools that weren't run by religious that didn't partake in it. And we haven't a clue of the horrible abuse that went on against children throughout what was supposed to be the era of saints and scholars in Ireland. We still haven't gone to homes or neighbourhoods yet. And that's where the real abuse will come to the fore at that point, and ruined lives and you know, suicides, and you know, there's reasons for why people can no longer want to live in the world at this time, and the reasons are that they have been treated with a kind of callousness and often in the name of religion, and you know, as a priest, that just sickens you to the stomach that is still going on in this day and age. So as a priest, I just say that the church, is in a perilous condition at the moment, and there's a great reason for that, and it deserves to be, and it will continue to be until it honestly says we got this wrong and we were doing nothing on behalf of God, we were doing everything on behalf of our own culture of power.
Do you think now, on balance, has the Catholic Church done more harm or good in this country?
Do you know, I would say overall, I think the Catholic faith has done enormous good for his people. I think the Catholic Church has done enormous damage to his people.
Gardaí are now investigating, Brian, whether there were actual paedophile rings operating in these institutions, maybe in the church. Do you think they might find evidence of that?
I've no doubt that they will. That's the way abusers work. You know, there were abusers in some diocese, and there were abusers in some parts of rings in some parts of Ireland that were reported way back at the very beginning of this revelations. Not the very beginning of abuse, but the Brendan Smith era on, we'll say.
Yeah.
There were certainly rings at that time, and I have no doubt.
There were huge legal issues over using even the phrase paedophile rings at that point, even though I think a lot of people felt it was,
Brian, that's the problem about it.
How did these priests live with what they were doing? Like, they carried on, they were doing this enormous cruelty and kind of evil, twisted, whatever you want to call it. They carry on saying mass and around the place acting like men of God. How did they square that, do you think?
I don't know. One of the things that I've noticed when you're dealing with clerical abusers is that they think the world is against them, and they think they have a right to do anything, and they actually convince themselves that they're doing good while they're doing evil. Now, that's the greatest form of self-deception that you can possibly have. It's a criminal, but it's also sinful, a form of self-deception that they have. And there is a great deal of that around, and that's why I say they do pass on names to each other, call it what you wish, and they do create structures around themselves where they get into places of power, and even after they have been revealed as abusers, they can still find themselves in positions of power within communities, etc., etc., and it can be very dangerous, very hard, and very difficult to overcome it. There doesn't seem to be any great self-awareness of the damage they have done. That's my experience. Others may have different experience, but you ask me a simple question, yeah, I've given you a simple answer. They do it, I think, by convincing themselves that evil is good, and that right and that wrong is right. In other words, they can make anything right. That's how selfish and self-centered they are.
Okay, and look, I'm sure that's very hard for you to say that, yes, and it's hard for, yes, people to hear, but like, I suppose we do want to try and get some insight and understanding into all this. So you were only 10 yourself when you were first sexually abused, and look, I know from talking to you, Brian, it's never far beneath the surface for you anyway, even at this far remove and at this hour of your life now. And does a week like this bring it all back up again,
yeah,
fresh?
Absolutely. Anyone who has been abused never gets over the abuse, and it's quite near the surface. I had a very busy week. I was with a lot of people, and I was screaming to just get on my own, to process my own head this week, because nobody actually knows the damage that's done. And you know, the sad thing about this, Brendan, is, and this is the way news goes, this is the way the world goes, the sad thing about this is that after the horror of revelations, and we haven't mentioned the most horrible of all, that people in charge of those who had mental difficulties were actually used and abused by a huge number of people who should have been looking after and caring for them. I just find that, it just breaks my heart that I just cannot live with that at all. But you know something? The price of Oasis tickets will take over very shortly, if they hasn't already done so. And that whole thing of airwaves blasting it, which is wonderful and good and open, and it's great. But, you know, the world moves on, and the abused are left to sort themselves out until the next wave comes, and then they start off again. It has been a very difficult 30 years since this. And the one good thing about the 30 years of revelations has been it has helped people who never actually said they were abused, or even admitted to themselves they were abused. It has helped them to come to the surface of that. I mean, a lot of people come to me to talk about abuse because they know my own background. And, you know, I've found men and women in their early 80s who have never been able to admit that they were abused until they saw something that was said or written that just gave them that courage. And they have suffered a lifetime. Not only that, possibly their partners have been made to suffer too, that they didn't realise the mixed up feelings that were going in, and the dysfunctional ways that you're left because of somebody else's abuse. It's a lifetime. It is a lifetime of crucifixion. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to lie under it all the time. You have to be able to, through counselling, through your own spirit and spirituality, if necessary, you have to overcome that to be able to manage it and to convince yourself on a daily basis that you weren't to blame and there's no guilt attached to the one who was abused.
On a daily basis, is it?
Yes. It is a daily basis. Yes, it is a daily basis, because something will come up and you'll find yourself disappearing into the background because you think you're not good enough to be there. And all of a sudden you have to say to yourself, hold on a minute, God has given you gifts and God expects you to use those gifts. So, you know, use those gifts and don't let some evil person that tried to abuse you at an earlier stage of your life, don't let him have the last word in your life. I was recently talking to a counsellor about it, and the person said to me, you know, he said, Brian, have you ever thought of trying to regain the person you were before you were abused? And you know, that's a lot easier said than done, but it's almost impossible to remember your true self. You at the end, this is, I'm speaking of not my own abuse, but other abuse for people too. It's, for them, it's the same. You get to a stage in life where you say, I've spent so much of my life pleasing others that I don't know who I am.
Oh, Jesus. I heard a man during the week, I think he was on Prime Time, and he was in his 60s, and he said that his whole life had been kind of paranoia with people and unable to be himself with anybody because he had this locked inside of him that there was there was no real self there.
Yeah, there was no real self there, but I emphasize again that you know, with counseling, with management, with friends, with talking about it, you can have a good life. I mean, I would not say I've had a bad life. Do you know what I mean? I've had a good life, and I've had a useful life, thank God. But it is a struggle that I didn't need to have. And the only good thing that I can think that comes out of it, for me, and I'm not, don't want to talk about myself much more. I'd rather move on to something else.
Yeah.
But the only good thing is that I do have an understanding of what abuse is like, and that helped me to be brave enough to shout and scream about it from the rooftops when my colleagues had rather have been quiet about it.
Yeah. Has there been a lot of silence among your colleagues all down these recent decades and now again?
I this disappoints me greatly, and I don't want to make anyone feel bad about themselves or anything else, but you know, you get colleagues and they'll talk to the end of the days and they'll be extremely upset that somebody has done abuse, and you'll get others who'll go into silence and you don't know what they're thinking, but they don't seem to be agreeing in the condemnation of it anyway. And then you'll get others who'll be very vocal in it, but you ask them to say something in public and they never do. And I don't know what that is. I think that's the great sin of clericalism. This loyalty to a club rather than loyalty to the truth and a moral life.
And still there.
I think it's still there, sadly. It is still there.
Now, you talk about that, and I'm sorry to hear that you don't have hope that this wave is different, but you talk about that there are more waves to come, and we know that there are, you know, even the CSO are saying that it's tens of thousands of more people than we already know of.
Yes.
So do you think there are a lot of people out there who still haven't told anyone about their abuse, who still haven't even maybe come to terms with it, that it happened themselves?
Yeah, I can only say, you're right in saying, do I think? I don't know, in other words. But I, from all my experience, I would say that, I would say probably only about a fifth of the people that were abused were ever able to be spoken about. And that's only from talking to people myself in life. It made me miles off. But then we don't know, because unless people say it, how do we know? We can never know that until it. And people, it is, you know, some people have found a way of living with abuse by burying the thing as much as they can within themselves. It's not a very healthy way of doing it, but for some people, that's the only way they could do it. And we're not to be blamed for that. There'd be, given credit for doing that. But I think, you know, I think, Brendan, and you know, pull me back if I'm moving away too far, what has been in my mind this week is that we have reached a stage where all this abuse and has been let out in jumps and starts, and broken hearts and crying people and condemnations, etc., etc. But you know, we sometimes soon have got to say, what was rotten at the heart of Irish society? It wasn't just the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church was there in conjunction with governments and with other things else and a lot of good was done.
Brian, you know that a lot of people will say what was rotten at the heart of Irish society was the Catholic Church and the manifestation of the Catholic Church that grew in this country.
No, I don't think that it is one of the things that was rotten at the heart of society. It was this ability to pass on, you know, to blame others without questioning ourselves. And I think we're still at that yet. You know, I listen, for example, you know, the Catholic Church is not a power anymore. The Catholic Church as an institution is not a power anymore. Mm. I think the Catholic faith definitely is a power for good. And people are discovering that, you know, that to being ruled by or bullied by clerics is not on anymore. And they're right to do that. And they can, bottom line is, people are realizing very quickly that, nobody can stop me loving God, and nobody certainly can stop God loving me. I don't this, need this clerics might
sound,
to do that.
This might sound like an odd thing to some people, but I think you think that God is sending the Catholic Church a message.
Well, I hope he is.
Yeah.
Or hope she is. I hope God is, whatever, you know, we are. I'm absolutely certain about that. For example, it's a small example, but, you know, ever since I joined, I'm 55 years a priest and I'm 62 years in religious life, which is a fair lot of one's life, you know. And ever since I joined, they've been praying for vocations. And ever since I joined, vocations have been dropping off the roof and never more so than now. And, you know, I was walking and thinking about this one day and I had this awful thing that I found it impossible to pray for vocations, because really what we were praying for was male celibate vocations. We weren't. And then I came to the conclusion that there's heaps of vocations around. There's just a great shortage of male celibate vocations. So, you know, that turned me and said, maybe if we're praying to God, asking him for something for 62 years and he said no for 62 years, isn't it time we listen to it? Yeah. Surely it's time we listen to God rather than telling God we want more vocations to build up our institutional authority again. I think what God is saying to us, there's a different society, a different manifestation of the beauty of God around the world, a different manifestation of reaching God. And we do, as a church, do what you're supposed to do. Introduce people to the loving mercy of God in its myriad ways and do that. And you don't need male celibates put on pedestals or putting themselves on pedestals now to do that.
Okay.
Just give the Holy Spirit chance to lead people where the Holy Spirit wants to lead them.
Look, I know you don't want to talk about yourself, but I think there is one thing that I think would be useful that I want to ask you about, which is that you said the funeral mass for one of your abusers, and I wondered about that. So do you forgive him? And was that important for you in whatever healing you managed?
Well, it's a funny word, the word forgive. I'm not sure. I mean, I learned something from a great, lovely friend of mine, Gordon Wilson, who you know, in one short, sharp sentence, just turned a civil war into a healing experience when his daughter was blown up in the bomb in Enniskillen with 11 others. And Gordon and Joan used to always say afterwards, you know, that they were accused of forgiving the people who killed their daughter. And Gordon said, no, that's not what I said. I said, I hold no grudge against them. He said, it is not up to me to forgive. God is the only one who forgives. And I hand them over to God, who will judge them justly and mercifully, and leave them in God's hands. It's not me. All I do is I'm not letting them rule my life with bitterness and begrudgery from that on in. And that's what I do. I just say to the abusers, they're dead, they're gone, they're with God. I'm sure God will deal with them in the proper way. All I want to do is that I'm not going to hold bitterness against them, because bitterness crawls the insides out of me, as you know. And so why do I hold on to that? It's like you know, the old phrase that they use, that to hold on to bitterness and begrudgery is like taking poison yourself and expecting your enemy to die.
Yeah. Look, I know that was probably an upsetting conversation for you to have, and it's upsetting to hear it actually as well. But just in case you kind of think, why am I doing this? There's a flood of texts here of people saying how much consolation they are getting from you today and how much consolation they get from you, how wonderful, helpful you are. Someone says that Father Brian Darcy is the only priest I want to listen to and that I trust. That's from Maria. There's a question here, and this might get you on the hop now, but someone, a texter, wondering, ask the priest, did the abusers confess the abuse to their confessors ever?
That I don't know. All I know is it was never confessed to me.
Okay.
I presume they did. I presume they did. But, you know, clerics who have done moral theology have ways of expressing things without saying the real thing.
Yeah. Brian Darcy, thank you very much. Listen, there's even a suggestion here that people are crying out for faith but can no longer follow the Catholic Church as we know it. Would Brian consider leading a new branch based in one of the soon-to-be decommissioned churches and watch people flock? I think you've done enough at this stage now. I don't think we could ask you to start a new branch of the church at this stage.
I don't want to do that because I absolutely believe in the Catholic faith, totally. That's why I'm so angry and so vocal in it that clericalism has destroyed the Catholic faith. And I would just say, please don't let the clerical church destroy your belief in a loving God.
Brian Darcy, thank you very much.